Benjamin Graham versus Northern Pipeline, The Birth of Modern Shareholder Activism. The cash capital not needed by these pipeline companies in the normal conduct of their business or to provide for reasonable contingencies should be returned to the stockholders whose property it is in the form of special dividends and/or reductions of capital. Benjamin Graham, 1927. Here was I, a stout Cortez Balboa, discovering a new Pacific with my eagle eye. The year was 1926, and Benjamin Graham was sitting in the Interstate Commerce Commission, ICC, reading room in Washington, D.C., studying Northern Pipeline Company's balance sheet. Nobody on Wall Street, not even the brokerage houses that had followed Northern Pipeline for years, had bothered to look up the company's public ICC report. As the stock languished at $65, the report revealed that Northern Pipeline generated over $6 per share in annual earnings and owned millions of dollars of investment securities worth $90 per share. Benjamin Graham described the feeling years later in his memoir, "I had treasure in my hands." All he had to do now was convince Northern Pipeline's management to share the company's wealth with its stockholders. At a time when the stock market was little more than a betting pool, Benjamin Graham developed a value investing style based on rigorous analysis of company fundamentals. By focusing on companies' intrinsic values, Graham and his followers were hugely successful at capitalizing on market inefficiencies created by the more speculative investing public. The gradual acceptance of Graham's lessons has led to more efficient markets that trade closer to fair value than they did in his time. But one arbitrage persists to this day. It is caused by the frequent divergence of interests between management and shareholders. When Benjamin Graham confronted Northern Pipeline's management in 1926, he took a path untrodden. Shareholder interventions at that time usually involved lingering disputes between large minority owners or strategic buyers seeking control. A recent academic study charting shareholder activism from 1900 through 1949 found only 7 instances where a financial buyer running an investment vehicle led an offensive activist campaign, and many of those early contests were quite tame. When brokerage firm J.S. Bache sought board representation at Central Leather in 1911, it merely wanted the company to provide quarterly financial updates to shareholders. Why was shareholder activism so rare in the early 20th century? First of all, ownership at public companies was concentrated into very few hands, usually founders, family owners, or entrepreneurial financiers. This made it hard for outside shareholders to have any influence. Second, public companies shared very little financial information with shareholders. This limited investors' ability to value companies objectively. Graham saw both of these forces at play at Northern Pipeline. None of the other shareholders knew the company was hoarding so much capital, and the Rockefeller Foundation effectively controlled Northern Pipeline's management through a 23% equity stake. Beyond these structural constraints, there was a subtle societal one. Wall Street was an elite insiders' club that viewed pushy stockholders as extortionists. But all of this was changing. Benjamin Graham himself led a revolution in fundamental analysis that received a tailwind from disclosure requirements in the Securities and Exchange Act of 1934. Ownership in public companies was rapidly diffusing in a way that would drastically alter the nature of corporate oversight. As for etiquette? When real money is at stake, etiquette goes out the window. The large railroads were the first public companies to share detailed financial information with a widespread stockholder base. Before the turn of the 20th century, many of them were subject to vicious, backstabbing fights for control, such as the Erie Railway proxy battle and Cornelius Vanderbilt's takeover of the New York Central. Benjamin Graham is often regarded as a distant intellectual forebear of today's hedge fund managers and shareholder activists. But this view gives him much less credit than he deserves.